Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis.
I'm Jeff Webb.
And you're listening to Tax Tuesday. Apologies for the tardiness. We were doing our best to break our system, but we were not successful. So here we are. Hey, we really do have to get hammering away today because today is a tax deadline and Jeff and his staff have been going crazy because CCH has done its dangdest to break today, right?
Yeah, make it difficult.
Yeah, they always like to make it interesting. So us and thousands of other accounting companies across the country have been having a lot of fun with our software today. The joy of it. Hey, if you listen to Tax Tuesday and you like what you're hearing or you like just being a student of information, by all means, go on and grab and sign up for some of our other social media platforms, including the YouTube channel, Facebook, LinkedIn. We're always putting new content out. We do like to do that. Tax Tuesday rules. You could ask questions. We're going to try to do our best to be done in an hour today. Like, I don't think we've ever done an hour, at least not when I've been around. Maybe when I'm not here, they'll keep on time. But today we're definitely going to do an hour just because Jeff's got a few hundred more returns to make sure they get in. We're pretty good right now, right?
We're not terrible.
Typical CPA. If you have questions, you can send them in Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors. We go through these, and this is where we kick them in. This is where we pick them to go over. And today, let's go over our opening questions. Let's start with number one. I have a small business. Do I need to make it an LLC to hire my children? Or can I just be an independent contractor and hire them? Is the limit that I can write off $12,000 per child? Just bought a house for $30,000 and spent about $15,000 in rehab. What expenses of this deal can I write off besides the rehab costs? I have a real estate business in Texas and was thinking of establishing a series LLC for my properties. How does this affect my ability to sell or do a 1031 exchange? Do I need to have a separate holding and management operation LLC? Where does having a land trust come into play? If I am a real estate professional in 2020, can I offset previous years, plural, passive losses in this year? In other words, if I have a whole bunch of passive losses, does becoming a real estate professional affect those? We are looking to purchase a used RV from a private party in California for $100,000. If we register a vehicle in our Wyoming holding company, can we avoid paying California tax, the sales tax? I'll answer that. Suppose one purchased a home in an opportunity zone and the funds for the renovation came for the sale of some stock options and earnings from an employee stock option program. If the person's accountant filed the taxes with no form 8996, that is for the opportunity zone, filed and the taxes were paid on the capital gains instead of deferring, what can a person do? The only reason that the stock was sold was to fund the renovation and improve the neighborhood. So it sounds like we have a botched opportunity zone fund. Can you put a primary residence into a land trust and or LLC to maintain anonymity if you have a commercial bank loan? If not, are there other options available? I have a question in regards to taking some money from a 401k without penalty due to the CARES Act. Is it possible to use it to invest for real estate property, or are there restrictions on where you can use the money? What are other ways to avoid capital gains aside from the 1031 exchange? Can a house be put in a nonprofit and then sold so no taxes are owed? And the last question today, I have a lot of passive loss carry forward from the 2019 tax year to 2020. If I elect to be a real estate professional in 2020 for the first time ever, can I use this passive loss from previous years as a deduction against ordinary income earned in 2020? So does it change the nature of the previous losses? So good questions, lots of them. Somebody says, any suggestions? I'm looking at some of your guys' questions. What's the time frame to receive a tax refund due to COVID? Says it's been about 4 weeks. You should have gotten it by now if you put your bank information.
Yeah, if you did a direct deposit and e-filed your return, it should be pretty quick. I'd say less than 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. If you paper filed your return and you're getting a paper check, it could be 8 to 12 weeks.
Yeah, so you should have received it. Oh, by the way, we do have people on this. I think we have, I know we have Patty and let me see who I have as staff. We usually have a few folks on answering your questions. We have Patty Pios, he's on. Oh, wow, he's not doing returns. Good man. And Tavia. And I don't think we have Elliot today. Again, a lot of our accountants are getting a little jammed. So we can look at that. Hey, there's some good questions that are coming up, but I'm going to hold off on them. We're just going to jump right in and start answering the questions that were submitted. So if I have a small business, do I need to make it an LLC to hire my children? Or can I just be an independent contractor and hire them? Is the limit that I can write off $12,000 per child?
You don't have to have an LLC. If you got a small business, I would suggest an LLC just for your liability protection. But if you have a business, the only requirement to pay your children would be you would need to run it through payroll.
So if you're an independent contractor, you're not required to do all the payroll stuff if you hire your kids. You don't have to do the withholdings or the Social Security.
How would you report the wages, the income to them?
You don't have to run it. I mean, you may have to run through payroll and you may not have the Social Security.
Right. You don't have to have Social Security.
So that's how I'd be reporting it. So I guess you would have a federal tax withholding, possibly state income tax withholding.
Right. So any business, as long as you run a payroll form, you can run it through. And the reason we say $12,000 per child is
standard.
That's a standard deduction. That's the most you can pay them without them reporting taxes or paying taxes.
They're going to have a standard deduction. What is it, $12,200 or $12,400 this year? But $12,000 is a good number. Then you don't have to worry about them. If they contribute to an IRA, you could toss on another $6,000, right?
Right.
So if you paid them $18,000, then you could fund an IRA and you still have zero tax. If you have a 401k, potentially they could put $19,500 in deferred. Mm-hmm. So now you can pay them almost 30 some odd thousand without worrying about a dollar of tax yet. And when we usually use this, and by the way, just the independent contractor is the exception to the rule for all the withholding. I usually have clients as S-Corps because you avoid so much of the old age, death and survivors in Medicare. And I think that's the same with you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Then you would just run payroll, just general payroll. And most of our clients, again, are going to defer a chunk of it directly into a retirement plan, because if you can get that money in for a kid.
Some people will, rather than running payroll, will try to do 1099 their children instead. That doesn't quite work as well because it's not a deduction to your business for their payroll taxes, but they will have to pay self-employment taxes on every dollar over $400 that you pay them.
Even with the standard deduction.
Even if they're taxable income is zero, they're still going to have self-employment income.
So they're still going to have a little bit. But what if they write it off with business expenses? What if the kids have some? If they're running around at that,
they say good if they have substantial. Here we're talking older children.
We're talking older kids, maybe.
Yeah, so for 1099, they could do that, but for W-2, they wouldn't be able to write off those business expenses. They'd have to be reimbursed by the employer.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. More questions. It says, I am starting a LLC with four partners. I'm retired on disability. Oh, boy. What is the best way to incorporate? Well, you'd use the LLC with all four partners if that's all you're doing, and you make it a partnership, depending on what you're doing. If it's a active business, you're more than likely going to make that into a corporation. If you are, and it would be an S or a C, depending on what you guys, whether you have to take salaries out. If it's a passive business, like you're buying passive assets like real estate, you're more than likely going to be a partnership. So we have a lot of questions, but it looks like some of them are already getting on there. Question on a 1031. My wife owns it in her name only, California single family residence. We are selling it at the end of this month and plan to 1031 exchange. So this must be an investment property. We have an irrevocable domestic asset protection trust with own tax ID, which is the sole member of our holding company, Wyoming. How do we make sure that we can be anonymous for the new, upleg large scale multifamily residence if the downleg property is only my wife's name, personally, her tax ID, trying to figure out how to make sure this happens. So this is what you have to do. So Aaron, to make it really simple, when you 1031, you're going to have to go name to name. So, and I didn't mean to jump in this, Jeff.
I agree with you on that.
So the wife has to acquire the new property from the intermediary. But wife can immediately put that into an LLC, and it could be an anonymous LLC, or wife could immediately put it into a land trust with a separate trustee, you could actually have an LLC be the trustee of a land trust and make it an anonymous LLC. So nobody will see. Like the only thing that potentially could happen is somebody looks back in title and sees that your wife, her name was on there somewhere, but that does not denote current ownership. Like maybe a savvy person knows enough to figure out that you guys have that property as an investment property and looks up that property and pulls up its history. Otherwise, you're not going to see that in a typical asset search. But that would be the way to do it if they're willing to, and I think it would screw up your 1031 exchange, if they're willing to take it and put it in and close in the trust. I just know that the IRS is pretty staunch about name to name. So the other way you could potentially do it is to put it in a trust, an anonymous trust, before doing the 1031 exchange, but then you're at risk of the IRS saying, hey, you didn't do a proper exchange. You transferred it right before. You didn't hold it as an investment for the requisite period of time. And it gets kind of interesting. Let's keep jumping on. I'm going to go all day, and I know that we're already zipping away. Just bought a house for cash for $30,000 and spent about $15,000 in rehab. What expenses of this deal can I write off besides the rehab costs?
Okay, here's my opinion, Toby. If you bought a house for $30,000 and the rehab was half of that, I'd say it's highly likely that you're going to have to capitalize all of that. Because I see a lot of people buy distressed house and then get large loans to totally gut the joint. So you can't write off those expenses as repairs typically. Now, what expense can you write off? Well, that depends on one of two things. Are you flipping the property or is it going to become an investment property?
Yeah. So that first thing I kind of asked myself when looking at this is I said, hey, what kind of house? Is this your house? Is this your personal property? Is this an investment property or are you intending to sell this? And all three of those things are treated differently. If you bought it as your house, the $15,000 gets capitalized and it's personal property. There's no depreciation. If it's an investment property, you have $30,000. Part of that is land, which you don't depreciate. So let's say that $5,000 of that is land, $25,000 is the improvement on the property, and then we just toss another $15,000 on there. Most of that's probably going to be improvement. So I'm with Jeff. You're going to add that to basis, but that's depreciable basis. You're going to have $25,000 plus $15,000, so $40,000 of depreciable basis. What can you write off? Really depends. What we could do is do a cost segregation, break those pieces down into 5, 7, 15-year property and 27.5-year property, assuming this is a house that where people reside. And you could write off probably about 30% of that. So probably around $12,000 in year one, if you do that.
Versus $1,500 if it's you just make it all 27-year property.
Yeah. I mean, we would look at some of the 15 and see which part of it's repair versus an improvement. And then the other issue is, what if it's a flip? In which case, all of this is just basis, and you don't get a deduction for anything. Technically, it's basis. It's not a deduction. So it's inventory. So you're basically running a car lot with houses. So somebody's asking a question about the banking structure. So I see that. So here's how it works. So let's say that I had a holding entity that owns other LLCs. And those LLCs bring in money and they pay it up. There are folks out there, like it's what's called a non-dispositive issue. It won't kill you if you don't have bank accounts and all the sub LLCs, but it is a factor that the courts can consider to determine whether they're going to honor those LLCs. So the money would normally, you'd say, hey, if you have a property manager, you don't really need bank accounts on each of the individual LLCs. It's not changing anything. You would just have the property manager issue those monies to the holding entity, straight up to the holding entity. What's your risk? Your risk is somebody says, hey, you didn't honor the separateness. You're going to say, hey, I honor the separateness. I kept separate books on everything. I know each property. That's all I'm required to do. And you're going to be fine. I've never seen anybody get in trouble with it. Mm-hmm. But if you are self-managing and you're receiving the rents, you need to have something in that state or you're really going to have a trouble. So I would either have a property manager in that state that has a bank account, or I would have each LLC have its own bank account. It depends on your banker and where you're banking and how easy they are to work with. I've had good ones and bad ones. I tend to go with the side of having a bank account. But if it's really a pain, then it's not going to blow you up. It'll be a factor. Just make sure you have good books. And if that's the case, you could have 10 LLCs in your home state with all rental properties, and you could have one bank account, your holding entity, and one bank account, you getting that. So I hope that makes you feel a little better. You know, you're not going to have bank accounts galore. One other question, then we'll jump to the others. First, I want to thank you for the information. You guys are the best. Thank you. Love watching the videos. I do too. My question is below. In escrow to purchase 7 houses and 70 lots in a particular state. We'll see. I won't say it. Based on all your videos, my strategy is to form a California LLC owned by a woman, Wyoming LLC, Texas, and S-Corp, given that there will be investors. So it sounds like you're going to develop. So it sounds like we're going to, yeah, okay, we plan to rehab and then build all 70 lots. Clint says, sell the lots after a year to avoid ordinary income. But so he says you're taxed as a dealer no matter what. It's a little bit confused. So here's what's going to happen. You're going to get taxed as a dealer when you're developing properties. And the dealer is just going to be ordinary income to you. There's no way around it. Mm-hmm. So what you want to do is once you've developed that, and if you're going to hold it for a longer period of time and sell it to somebody else, or you're going to make it into a rental property, you're going to build on it, whatever, you sell that on an installment sale to another entity. And that entity is the investor who's buying for the long-term hold. If you are flipping a house, some people are asking, what does that mean? If I buy something with the purpose to sell it, it is inventory. It is no longer a depreciable asset. It's just like buying Cheerios and putting them on a store shelf. Is that a good way to put it?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. And then it's taxed as ordinary income at your rate. And it is subject to old age, death, and survivors and Medicare, also known as self-employment, also known as Social Security.
So a question for you. Since the sale of undeveloped land has much favorable terms than the sale of improved properties, would you separate those into two different entities?
I might.
Because you're more likely to get capital gain treatment and installment gain treatment on the land than you will.
Yeah, it depends on how many lots you're developing. If you're doing 70, you're toast. If you do more than 6, I want to say, there's a threshold. There's a number threshold. That says,
but once you start flipping them, they become inventory again.
Yeah. If you just buy the land, subdivide, sell, then I think it's 6 a year before you're a dealer.
Okay.
If you, and don't quote me on that number, it's something like that. If I buy them, fix them up, develop them, and I what you're doing. I'm adding the value by getting the engineering and by putting in the infrastructure.
Yes. As soon as you run roads, sewer lines, and stuff.
That's all dealer. And when I do that, that's ordinary income. And what we want to do is get that out, off of you as quickly as possible. If we can cut that and say, like, let's say I'm developing a property, I buy it for $200, now it's worth $300, I sell it on an installment sale. Then now I say, okay, I'm going to pay you over a set, over a period of years, and I've just capped my ordinary income at that $100,000. And then as that property goes up in value, let's say I sell it in 2 years and it's worth $500. I'm going to have long-term capital gains on a portion of it that I can 1031 exchange. I cannot 1031 exchange dealer property. Let's see. So I'm going to keep jumping because I know you're time crunched. I have a real estate business in Texas and was thinking of establishing a series LLC for my properties. How does this affect my ability to sell or do a 1031 exchange? First off, it doesn't. It's per name. Like, so if you're in a series, you're going to have to take title in a series. So if I'm series one, or series A, series B, whatever, of such and such series LLC, then I just have to make sure I take title in that exact name. Do I need to have a separate holding and management entity? Usually you want to, but you're not required to. The operations is if you're managing your own properties. If you have a property manager, by all means, you could use a third party. I like having a management company because there's lots of other expenses we can write off the road. Where does having a land trust come into play in the series LLC? It's like any other LLC. What you're doing is you're using the land trust to hold title, and then the individual series are the beneficiary. So you're just trying to make sure that if there's a loan, they won't call the loan due on if you're putting it in a trust. And technically, there's a law called the Garden St. Germain Act that says they cannot, if it's a revocable trust that's used as your primary residence or as a residence, But what it means is most banks look at trusts and say, oh, we don't call those due. If you put it directly in the series, A, everybody knows where it is. So if you're worried about anonymity at all, that could be an issue. But also you may get the due on sale. And I've only seen it twice in 22 years where I've had one called.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
So, I mean, I had it, and that was just somebody took it out or put it in. And then the bank was like, no, we don't want you to put that in there. So I think we actually put it in trust and they were happy. So I just don't want you guys to run into this. Let's see. Once I sell a flipped house, how long should I keep the LLC I created for that flip active? I.e., when can I dissolve it? After the statute of limitation is run? No, you could dissolve it right away. You don't have to keep it. As soon as it, there's some people that as soon as it closes, they're going to go down.
Cash a check and dissolve that puppy.
Cash it, drain it, dissolve it. And that's kind of the standing operated procedure. Most people aren't doing it like the day after. They're just saying, hey, that's next month. I'm going to dissolve it.
Yeah.
When it comes due.
If you wait statute of limitations, you're just leaving assets in there. Well, just looking for
the thing is trouble. That there really is no statute of limitations. It could be upon discovery.
I was thinking tax statute, but yeah, you're right.
You still got 7 years. Isn't that stinky? And that's if there's a substantial underpayment, then it's forever, right? 25% or more.
I think if they can prove fraud, they can go back 6 years instead of the normal three.
I think there's a bigger one. Isn't there one that's like forever? Fraud is forever, I think.
No, I didn't think so, but.
That's something for us to look up. I always like the stuff that I can't remember that I can go to. What can you, can't you rename an LLC in lieu of dissolving? No, because it's still the same entity. What you're trying to do is cut the liability. So you dissolve the LLC because it's liable for all the activity. If you just change the name, then anything, you may be in the middle of a flip and somebody files a claim, they could encumber your title because it would be with the state.
And a lot of the secretary state sites follow that change of name changes and such.
Somebody says 1031 exchange. Oh yeah, I have to go to this. Somebody's talking about Biden eliminating the 1031 exchange. Biden can't eliminate the 1031 exchange. Nope. You still need Congress. Now, could he push it and say that he's going to, it's the same thing as, you know, Trump was going to eliminate the Obamacare, right? Well, mm-hmm. He ran into some problems with that, right? He did he did a lot of workarounds. So, you know, he's going to build a wall. He's going to do all these things, right? But you got to deal with Congress. So everybody makes promises during the presidential elections. I don't think 1031 exchanges are going away. The real estate lobby would probably have a little something to say about that. I am a real estate professional in 2020. Can I offset previous year's passive losses in this year?
No, unfortunately, that real estate professional would be for 2020, not for any years that you were not a real estate professional.
I'm going to draw this up, Jeff, just because I always find it's helpful when you're thinking of all the different types of losses and income to visualize it. I have trouble otherwise. So let's say we have 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. All right. And we have passive, which would be real estate or businesses in which you do not materially participate. We have passive income. Let's say we made $100,000 passive. 2018, we made $50,000 passive, but we lost. So we'll call this profit. We'll call this loss. I'll make a little line here. And we lost 100. Then in 2019, we made 50,000, but we became a real estate professional and we managed to generate a $200,000 loss. And then in 2020, we broke even and we don't have any loss. So we start looking at these and you just go by the rule, passive losses can offset passive income only.
Right.
And if you don't have enough passive income, you carry it forward. Active real estate professional income is ordinary loss, and it can offset anything. So here we have this plus. So we don't worry about 2017. Here in 2018, we have a $50,000. So the net is $50,000 passive loss, which we carry forward into 2019. Here we have $50,000 of passive income. We have a PAL that would take that out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'd offset these two. Now you have an active $200,000 loss. This is where it gets fun. We can go back with that, right?
Yep.
So we could actually carry this back this guy right here, we could carry this all the way back to 2014. And let's just assume that we didn't have anything to offset. We'll eventually knock this out and we'll still have an extra 100. So we'll use this against that. So just to give you guys an idea. That's why I wish it was cleaner than that, but it makes a difference what you are the year that you make it. So those losses are etched in that particular year. So if you have a passive loss, all you're ever looking for is, am I going to sell the item, the asset? Because then I could take that loss against the gain. Or, I'll just take the loss. Or do I have passive income that I could offset with it? If I have ordinary loss, I'm looking for anything, any income. And I can carry that loss forward to both of them. Hope that makes sense, guys. If you understood that, by the way, you get a star. Somebody said, never mind, I got it. Love it. All right, so we're just going to jump into another. Somebody says, oh, right, but it's also the corporate tax rate that could increase personally. Yeah, what they're talking about with Biden, I just so you guys know, Biden's pledge to increase the capital gains tax back to 28% and to move the corporate taxes back. I believe it was back
to 35%.
Yeah, well, I think it's back the way they were. And then Julie says, what about the rest of that 100,000? I'll go back. That 100,000 you carry forward. So
it could be carried forward to that 2019.
Yeah. So you'd have a loss, an active loss of 100,000, and you'd keep carrying it forward until you use it up. Yay. And somebody says, please explain passive income versus passive. Passive income is income from businesses in which you do not materially participate. So if I put money in Jeff's accounting practice, but I don't do accounting, and I'm just sitting there as a passive investor, even if it's in an S corp, I'm passive.
Right.
I never pay a self-employment tax. If I have real estate, it's presumed to be passive always, unless I'm a dealer. And then you look at your losses. And if you have losses, here, I'll go back to this slide. If you have losses, then it's passive loss can only offset passive income. And you can carry forward passive losses. You don't carry them back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Active losses would be a net operating loss can offset any income. Your W-2, we don't care.
Right.
In order for it to be a net operating loss with real estate, you have to qualify as a real estate professional. Real estate professional is found in code provision 469C7. 469C7. I'm just going to write that for you because you're going to tell your accountant to familiarize yourself with them with that. Because if you hit that, your losses automatically become ordinary. And this is a gold mine because this, I could have paper losses on a property I bought. I could buy a property for $1 million. I could put $50,000 down, finance the hell out of it, or have other people and put the cash in. And I don't even put dollars in. And I can cost sag it and take a 30% loss in year one. That would give me basically a $200,000 to $300,000 loss to use against my ordinary income. So I can knock my W-2 down. So you guys that are high income earners, real estate professional is your friend. And only one spouse really has to qualify. So if you're married filing jointly, one spouse. So you could have high net, you know, I have a gal who's a surgeon. Makes a ton of money. Her husband manages their property. Mm-hmm. And we're picking off properties every year, just looking for which ones to sag. And you use the cost sag to eliminate some of the tax on, actually I have a couple of these that are surgeons where the wife's the surgeon and the husband's doing the real estate. And you're using the loss from the real estate, the paper loss, to offset her W-2 or her professional practice money. Anyway, so we keep jumping on. Fun stuff. We are looking to purchase a used RV from a private party in California for $100,000 for business use. Sure, it's business use. If we register a vehicle with our, by the way, I don't just say that. The IRS likes to say that too. If we register the vehicle with our Wyoming holding company, can we avoid paying the California 8.75 sales tax? What say you, Jeff?
Quick story. We actually had somebody who, tried to do this, bought the RV for business use and drove it across country because they had a director's meeting across country. Well, they didn't mention that it was at their son's house for Thanksgiving.
How'd that go over?
Not well. So back to the you're going to have to register this RV wherever it's being garaged. It doesn't matter that it's being held by a Wyoming company or whatever company. If this RV is spending all its time in California, the state is going to hunt you down and make you register it in the state of California. So you may have a different opinion on this, but
no. So what you have is somebody's looking, which is why it's so annoying that Mar-a-Lago gets benefits overlooked. No, Mar-a-Lago is a conservation easement. I'll explain that one. It is genius. If you guys know what they do, it's literally a joke of how
I had a client who did that country. His country club.
Yep. I'll explain how that goes in a second, Catherine. It's just for cocktail parties. You can tell people. I'll show you how it's done. All right. So where we buy it is going to dictate where there's sales tax. So you buy it in California, they're going to hit you with the sales tax. Now let's say you say, but we're not going to use it in California. We're going to use it exclusively outside the state. California will tell you, well, if it's going to be out of the state and it's not here, then you don't have to pay our sales tax. Mm-hmm. You would pay wherever it's going to be registered and where it's going to be parked. If it's driving all over Timbuktu, Egypt, then it's not really parked anywhere. As long as it's not in California, they don't care.
Right.
But the problem you have is, let's say we put it in Wyoming. Wyoming has a sales tax of 4%, plus all states have something called a use tax. And the use tax is when you put an asset there that you didn't pay sales tax on, and they say, great, pay sales tax here. So for example, if you're in California, buy the RV in Wyoming, and you say, I'm going to ship it over to California, don't charge me any sales tax. Sales tax, California is going to get you on the use tax. So there's a couple things here. First off, you're buying it for business use. Business use means 50% or more use for business. Any portion that you use for your own recreation is taxable too. So I tend to tell people, hey, don't make it hard. Just buy the RV. It's yours. Reimburse yourself the mileage. Your mileage is 58 cents a mile. Mm-hmm. And go drive around for business. If you have rental properties in different states, go visit them. If you're looking at investing in certain states, go take the RV. I have a buddy of mine who's a lawyer. He calls it the war wagon. Whenever he goes to trial and he tries cases all over the country, he takes his war wagon. Well, all those miles are deductible. And because it's an RV, you can do 280A with this. So you can get somewhere in the neighborhood of $750 a day for 14 days, so about $10,000 a year, you'll be able to get tax-free out of your company. You screw that up if it's a business asset. Plus, if it's a business asset, you will find that the insurance is going to be a little more expensive. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add on that one?
No, I mean, people who usually do this are aware of that $100,000 write-off or whatever the RV mm-hmm. cost, and that's very lucrative, but it does come with its risk. Mm-hmm. It is something that IRS looks very hard upon to see how you're actually using that recreational vehicle.
Yeah, they lots of people buy the RV and the boat and call it a business asset, and they'll say, oh, I used it 80% for business. And they're like, okay, prove it. Where's your log? What? Yeah, a bunch of questions. NRA got caught. Yes, lots of people get caught. But yeah, they were doing some funky stuff. Can I lease my RV to my business? Yes, but then you have sales tax going back to you and you have income going back to you. I want money that comes from the business to me tax-free, not reported anywhere. So that works. Catherine, I moved 4,000 out of my active C-Corp to cover LASIK surgery. This would be a health cost.
Right.
That's
medical
fine.
Medical deduction, yeah.
Yeah, so it's deductible as another, how do you guys label that, other employee
expense? Out of pocket.
But on the corporation return.
On the corporation, it's a medical reimbursement.
Yeah, you just call it medical reimbursement, and yeah, you'd get that tax-free. That's why we do it. Mar-a-Lago. Okay, so Mar-a-Lago, if you understand how conservation easements work, here's how it works. If I give to a true conservation company, like Ducks Unlimited is a big one, and I give them a permanent right, a gift, that reduces my fair market value of my real estate. Mm-hmm. So think of, here's a big bunch of real estate in a really expensive area. Somebody says, what's 280A? It's 280A. Section 280A is disallowance for certain business deductions of the home. But at the end, it's 280A, subsection G, subsection 2. There's a little prize there for you if you're willing to go to the end of it, where it says you can rent your house out less than 15 days and not record the income. So you have to have a third party that you rent to, and a corporation qualifies. All right, so Mar-a-Lago. So we take, yeah, you can rent an RV, you can rent a boat, anything that has a sleeping quarters and a head in it, yeah, you can. And you can have multiple houses too. So like if I have two residences, we just tell taxpayers, you know, husband and wife or single, 14 days. Like, don't go above that. We know that we're good. We have been for decades. That's been going on since the 80s. So don't think it's new. Don't think we're original.
So if you don't know what a conservation easement is, it is a guarantee. It's an easement on your property saying, I will not change this property.
Or I could give them mineral rights. So like if Jeff has land with oil under it, he could give away the oil rights to a conservation company, knowing full well he could go after that oil. Or if it's granite and he's right. Got valuable minerals underneath his land and you give it to a third party nonprofit, Jeff gets a deduction. The fair market value he would get as a charitable deduction, limited to 50% of his adjusted gross income. Any excess he can carry forward for 5 years. Now, what Trump did is he gave away the development rights to break that golf course into single lots. And I believe that there was, don't quote me on this, I think it was six big parcels, and he did it to three of them. And he also did it to the clubhouse. And what he did with the clubhouse is he says, we're going to maintain the original antiques that are inside the clubhouse. And every year they have a gala where people can come, and it's the big, you know, that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So he got about $5 million deduction that year for that. Right. Well, he didn't come out of pocket anything. He just said, hey, here, I'll give the development rights to this entity. They get to hold it. So what we know is that Mar-a-Lago is always going to be there. It's going to be really tough. Like, it's always going to be open space. Yeah, French antiques. Some people are. Yeah, probably. All right. Hey, if you like that type of stuff, by the way, this is a good segue for a shameless pitch. We just came out with the tax toolbox, $5.95. What we do is we have an electronic version only for $4.95. You can go in there and log in. There you go. It has about 20 here. I'll just go over it real quick. It has 22 different lessons and a 278 page workbook. And what I did with the workbook is I just gave you all the different documents to take advantage of the deductions we go over in there. Cause like 280A, for example, you have to get a couple quotes. Here's the agreement between it. If you're a realtor and you want to, and you know, and your broker won't pay you, they say I have to give it to Jeff individually, but Jeff has an S corp because it's going to save him 10 grand a year. You can use some documents. There's two documents under a Fleischer decision that says, hey, as long as I let the broker know and I have an employment agreement with my S corp, then I can treat it that way. Or sometimes you guys take it 100% on the Schedule C and then put it on the S too, right?
Yeah, if they're sending a 1099 to them personally, we will nominee it over to the S corporation.
Yeah. So there you go. So we'll figure a way. There's always a way. We just have to dot our I's and cross our T's. And speaking of that, come to the TaxWise workshop. That'll also be included in the tax toolbox. We're going to do a online version this year, but usually they're 2 days. Sometimes we go 3 days. Probably move them to 3 days again. If you guys know me, we never end early. And that's just because we love to answer your questions. We love to make sure you get a lot of value out of it. And we're so much fun to hang out with, especially Jeff, except he's such a chatty Cathy.
I know. Can't shut up.
Here we go. All right. You can go to a link if you want to. It's aba.link tax toolbox. I guess that TTB 920. And here's all the stuff that's included. 22 lessons, 30 exhibits, plus you get the tax wise, and it's $5.95. If you want the digital only, it's $4.95. All right. Patty can get you those links if you need it. That's the last you're going to hear of that. Suppose one purchased a home in an opportunity zone and the funds for renovation came from the sale of some stock options and earnings from an employee stock option program. If the person's accountant filed the taxes with no form 8996 filed and the taxes were paid on the capital gains, in other words, you didn't report it. The only reason the stock was sold was to fund the renovation. So let's just call this what it is. You bought something in an opportunity zone, your accountant somehow screwed up and didn't report it. Maybe you didn't tell them. And so they took the information you gave and did it. What do you do, Jeff?
I had a bunch of questions from this one.
Rightly so.
So I'm assuming by ESOP, they mean just a regular company stock option. plan, because a lot of these are retirement plans, which would not qualify for opportunity zones.
Oh, for the ESOP?
Right.
It could be, but it sounds like he might
be. Well, because you don't get capital gains from a retirement plan.
Well, he pushed it. The chances are these guys sold their business to the ESOP. And the ESOP is paying them out in tranches to spread out the capital gains on the sale of their business. So it sounds like he's not really maybe he's a participant.
Yeah, it sounds like he cashed out the stock options so he could invest in this opportunity zone. But it looks almost like he purchased the property in his own name rather than in a entity.
Nail on head. So to qualify, so an opportunity zone are these areas where the government has decided, each state submitted it and said, hey, if you buy properties or businesses or set up businesses in these particular zip codes and you keep them there for 10 years and sell them, you don't have to pay any tax. And you have to fund them with capital gains. So if you want the tax benefit, so you have to defer the capital gains. You're going to pay tax on the capital gains, but you're going to get a step up of 10%. And you're going to pay tax in what, 6 years now? 2026. So you're going to have to pay tax on it. It's just, you don't have to pay it for 6 years. You're only going to pay 90% on 90% of the income. If you set up, in order to do this, you actually have to have an opportunity zone fund, a QOF, a QOF, qualified opportunity fund. And that has to be a partnership or S corp or C corp. Yeah. So it has to be an entity and it has to receive your funds. So you can't just go invest it. Unless you invested in somebody else's partnership, but it can't be you and it can't be just you.
And you can't donate property to the fund either, correct? I mean, you can't go buy a house and then put that house in the fund.
No, you actually have to acquire.
You have to, okay, the right. Fund has to acquire.
I believe there may be an exception to that if you've had something and you're exchanging it, but yeah, and somebody says, what about a bank account for the zone fund? It does have to, it has to receive the fund. So it has to be.
Yeah, it's going to have a bank account.
Yeah. And just keep in mind, this could be a Dairy Queen too, or you could open up your computer business there. As long as you have 50% of the employees in the opportunity zone, the business qualifies. They have a 50% of income test. And then if you do buy real estate, you have to improve that real estate. So it's up to, I think it's 50% of its value. So it gets pretty interesting. Let's see. There's a whole bunch of questions. I won't dive into this because, as Jeff said, there are some definite, like we'd be sitting down with this client. Sounds like they're not going to qualify. Like they probably didn't have somebody telling them what they needed to do. They could go back and get relief if it was just an error. But it's like anything. You have to show excusable neglect and you have to show that it's not prejudicial to the United States government. So I would say that you'd have to show that your accountant had the information and screwed it up. If they screwed it up, fantastic. They fall on the sword. They say it was my fault. You're more 99% of the time they're going to agree to that. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So a bunch of other stuff. Somebody asking about the tax-wise. Tax-wise is on 12-1, I believe. We had to move it a little bit just because we have so much cool stuff. I don't know if you guys are paying attention to what's going on in the market, but inventory is drying up. I showed some folks this weekend the Federal Reserve numbers from the Fed, St. Louis Fed. So it's FRED, Federal Reserve economic data. And the inventory in the states where we buy, which is North Carolina, Texas, we're buying in Indy, we buy in Missouri. And we're talking about the inventory has dropped 37% in Charlotte and some places, 30%, 40%. We're watching it just go down. And everybody says, well, there's all these people that are going to, all the evictions are being held off. I don't know anybody that's getting hammered other than the retail folks. Everybody that I know that has multifamily or single families, they're in the 93, 94% collection. So we haven't seen it yet. It doesn't mean it won't happen. It just means that, man, we need houses. Everybody needs houses. It's crazy. It's like nut and fruitcake. So anyway, even if it's owner financed property, somebody's asking, okay, primary residences, there's things that can be deducted on taxes, some mortgage interest, even if it's owner financed, yes, you still get that. Somebody says, what about the installment sale and the benefits from that? Okay, so let's say that, Jeff, let's pretend that you're going to sell me something.
Okay.
What are you going to sell me? Like a business, house or something?
Yeah, I'll sell you a house.
All right, so Jeff's going to sell me a house. And what did you pay for that house?
$100,000.
What is it worth now?
About $150,000.
So you have $50,000 a gain. And Jeff says, man, I am getting killed on the on my taxes this year. If I have that capital gains, let's say Jeff's in California, your capital gains rate would be 20% plus 13%. Let's say you're in the top bracket, plus mm-hmm. you're going to have net investment income tax. So Jeff is looking at arguably a 36% tax rate on that 50K. What if we say, Jeff, I'll pay you over 10 years. Now Jeff is going to get three types of income. He's going to get the return of his basis, which is zero.
Yep. Zero tax.
He's going to have some depreciation recapture, I should say, on his 100,000 if he depreciated any of it. He's going to have capital gains, which is going to get spread out over 10 years.
Yeah,
10 years. And he's going to have a little bit of interest that he's going to receive because I'm going to have to pay interest if it's more than $10,000. So we just spread out Jeff's tax hit. And that's why people use installment sales. Isn't that cool? Learn something new every day. And sometimes what we do is we take really highly appreciated. So Jeff says 150. Let's just put a few zeros on that. Let's say you had something you paid $1 million for and you have 15 million and you want to spread it out over your lifetime. We may take a look at your life expectancy and do an installment sale over the rest of your life and sell that asset maybe to your kids or sell it, put it in trust and sell it to the trust with your kids as the beneficiary. So that we can lock in its value for state taxes and we can spread out the tax hit. Plus, if we step up the basis, you could actually sell that business or that asset at a future date and not recognize all the taxable gain in that year. You'd spread it out over let's just say you're paying mom and dad out over 25 years. You're spreading out that tax hit over 25 years. It really does work like magic if you know what you're doing. All right. Can you put a primary residence into a land trust and or LLC to maintain anonymity if you have a commercial bank loan? If not, are there other options available? What do you say?
You can. I'm not sure that it's the best idea. We've talked about this before, though, about putting an LLC or a house primary residence to an LLC.
Yeah.
And what that does to your 121 exclusion.
It doesn't hurt it anymore. It doesn't kill your 121. The bigger issue with the LLC is the homestead. You can screw up your homestead potentially because the homestead's individual. So if you have an unlimited homestead, like in Texas, you're not going to want to use an LLC or Florida. You're more than likely going to use a trust because you already have an unlimited homestead. So what do you
mean? And if you come in and sue me, I no longer have that same protection.
Correct. I don't want to eliminate that. But if you're in California where the homestead is less than 100 grand and you have a $1.5 million house, you probably do want to have an LLC around it. But it sounds weird that you have a commercial bank loan. So it sounds like maybe it's a commercial bank. I don't know any other types of banks. Yeah. So it's not my personal bank. No, but if it's a primary residence, so it's a bank loan. So if you don't want them to squawk, use the land trust. I think we talked a little bit about that earlier. God, we had a bunch of questions, but we're already at 4:00. I don't want to drill your time off, Jeff. I promised Jeff that we'd be done in an hour because he's so swamped. I have a question with regards to taking some money from a 401k without penalty due to CARES Act. Is it possible to use it to invest for real estate property, or are there restrictions on where you can use the money?
There absolutely are restrictions. These withdrawals up to $100,000 from 401k or IRA are intended to be used for financial assistance in relationship to COVID.
Yep. You make a certification that it's COVID related. Now, that said, if you're spending the $100,000 that you have and you need this $100,000 extra because of the $100,000 you're being forced to pay, then you could say, well, the $100,000 I'm using is from the plan. They don't really look. The only place that they do look is when you're doing the EIDL loans. They will require that you use them for the damages done from the national disaster. So if you're using an economic injury disaster loan from the SBA, you have to use it for specific purposes. Everything else is kind of like the PPP loan. You could use that for whatever you want. It's just not forgivable unless you use it for particular things.
Is it a problem that when I go to get a loan for a property I'm buying and they say, well, where's this $100,000 of cash coming from? Because they always ask.
Yep. And you say, I withdrew it from my 401k. That's fine. Now, when you say without penalty, that's telling me that it's an early withdrawal. Don't forget that you can borrow $100,000 from your 401k, 403b, 457, your qualified retirement plan, not an IRA, but you can borrow 401,000, or excuse me, you can borrow 401,000. You can borrow 100,000 from your 401k. So you can use that money for anything. Mm-hmm. You have a deferral of payback for the rest of 2020, and then you have to pay it back over 5 years quarterly. Lots of questions on this, by the
way. And I was going to say, if you're taking distributions to purchase real estate and all, you need to remember that that money has to be put back in to be tax-free.
Within 3 years. By the end of the third tax year, which would be 2022, right?
Yeah.
So it's not really 3 years. They say 3 years. It says 3 years, but I think it's three. They have to give us some definition. Yeah, somebody says, can I present a tax question? Yes, you can, though there's about 100 sitting in front of you. I just saw that. It said, I want to see if there's anything right here. For CARES, what can be done with a Roth IRA? You can always take your money out of a Roth that you put into it. You can take out the growth in it after 5 years without penalty. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the penalty, then you can do the early withdrawal. But I don't see that really. You're going to be able to get the money. There's not going to be an issue. Are the $150,000 EIDL loans being forgiven? No. The advance, so they give you up to a $10,000 advance. You don't have to pay that back. But the actual loan itself is 30-year loan at 3.75%.
Yeah, the only free money that I'm aware of from all the CARES and all the COVID related is the up to $10,000 EIDL grant and the PPP loan can be forgiven. Other than that, everything has to be paid back somewhere.
Yeah. Is the owner finance interest and property tax deductions refundable, or does it go directly on your tax bill? You'd claim it on your Schedule A, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to exceed your standard deduction, which is always an issue.
Yeah, if you're filing jointly, it's $24,000.
Yeah, it's such a high amount. Yeah, so unless you're in California, we know.
You're there.
Somebody says, what's out there to help adult children? You can always employ them. You can put them on your board. There's a misnomer out there that you have to pay everybody a wage. No, you can give them fringe benefits, even if they're tax-free, if they're helping you. So you can have them on your board and you can do a medical reimbursement plan, or, you know, you could pay them and dump it straight into their 401k. There's lots of things you could do. Somebody says, can you use EIDL loans for paying W-2 for yourself out of an S-Corp? Yes, you can, but you're supposed to use PPP to do that if you have a PPP loan. Somebody says, don't you have to use the PPP loan for at least 60% of wages? No, that's to make it forgiven.
Right.
So if you're in a crisis and you have to choose between, I don't want to have to pay this money back versus I need to survive and fire everybody and lay everybody off, guess what I'm doing? Sorry, love my people, but the business has to survive or nobody has a job, right? So the guaranteed way to make sure nobody has a job, including you, is to have your business go under. So your first task is to keep that business going when all hell's breaking loose. And I'm not going to be worried. By the way, that those PPP loans, you don't have a personal guarantee. So your business goes away, you walk away from it. So just want to make sure that you understand that. Yeah, I'm going to have to jump in this. I've gone long for Jeff, so we're going to knock these last ones out. What are the other ways to avoid capital gains from aside from a 1031 exchange? Can a house be put in a nonprofit and then sold so no taxes are owed? What say you, Jeff?
Can a house be put in a nonprofit and sold so no taxes are owed? Absolutely.
Yeah, now you're thinking like us. Yeah. What other ways can we avoid capital gains?
We talked about the Qualified Opportunity Fund.
It's going to defer it for a while.
Yeah. Another way is harvest other capital losses while you can.
Yep. So maybe we do a cost seg on a property so that we don't pay any tax. Because capital gains aren't bad. If you're married filing jointly, you have long-term capital gains and you don't have other income, or you manage to push your income down low, you got 80 grand of capital gains that you pay zero tax on.
Yeah, I've never seen
a year.
I've never seen taxes exceed the proceeds from the sale of a property. So
yeah, yeah. No, this is where it gets fun. You could also do it a installment sale, and if you're retired, you're going to be in a low tax bracket. So I just said the magic word: long term capital gains are taxed at zero if you're below 80,000. Mm-hmm. So you have a required minimum distribution. You still have your standard deduction. Now you have this money coming in, even though it's capital gains. Who cares? It's zero. Like, or it's 15%, big whoop. I'll take that action all day long. My aggregate tax bracket's going to be in single digits. So
now, one thing I'm going to bring up, see what you have to say, Toby, is putting a house in a nonprofit and selling it there. Once you put it in the nonprofit, you're getting a deduction for a charitable deduction for it.
Yeah. But
those proceeds are now the charity's money. It's not your money anymore.
Right. But a lot of our people are really good people. They're going to give it away anyway. So, but also your family can work for us. You talk about, you know, your adult children, give them a purpose. Don't give them money, to give them a purpose. Our PPP funds more closely regulated than EIDL loans. I would say the EIDL is much more staunch on what it could be used for.
Right.
But yeah, all the people that go to jail are doing the PPP loans because they're the ones that were getting the millions of dollars and buying Bentleys with it. Let's see, regarding the CARES Act 401k withdrawal and loan, would an audit be more likely if you take advantage of both? No, there's almost no audits on the exempt entities, guys. Like, I'll just tell you this. Everybody's always talking about 401k, they're going to come in and they're going to look at my 401k. No, they're not. There was a great case in New York where they asked them to terminate their 401k plan because they hadn't been using it. They had done a bunch of violations and they were like, oh, shoot, we have to give so much to our employees. Just please call it dead. They wouldn't do it. They said, hey, how about we just give you a little penalty instead? And they go, no, really, we want to kill it. How about we reduce the penalty? The Department of Labor has to get in when you kill a 401k, and they don't want to be involved. So you're going to see active resistance. Where you get problems with the IRA is when you buy real estate in it and then go live in that real estate or use it as your vacation property. Then they can say, hey, all that money that was in that IRA is all taxable. Whether you know, you could have spent $10,000 on something and the whole fund is toast because they get to take the whole thing and say, oh, IRA violation, whole thing taxable. Somebody says, is SBA reopening the PPP and EIDL loan application period? The EIDLs are still out there, I believe. The PPP is done. And are they going to reopen it? Not without Congress giving them some more money. And if we could get Congress to actually do their jobs, that would be great. Or maybe we should be thankful they're not doing their jobs. I don't know. It's always a double-edged sword because every time they meet, it seems like our deficit goes nuts. So maybe we should just tell them to stay home. And by the way, while we're talking about people staying at home, that's what I tell all the rioters. I say, I'm working at home. You should work from home too. And if you feel like rioting, burn your own house, like burn your own stuff, trash your own yard. Don't go into my backyard and trash all my stuff, right? That's just me being mean. I have a lot of passive losses carried forward from the 2019. This is our last question. And it's a lot like the earlier one. So our esteemed folks will now be able to, our audience will now know the answer to this. I have a lot of passive loss carried forward from the 29 tax year to 2020. If I elect to be a real estate professional in 2020 for the first time ever, can I use this passive loss from the previous years as a deduction against ordinary income earned in 2020? So we have, I'll draw this up, 2019 and 2020. And we have lots. So let's just call this 500,000. I have a ton of what's called passive activity loss. And here it comes.
That's a big loss.
Yeah. So it comes up to 2020. Does it change its nature? No, it's still a PAL. And I have active income. Can passive losses be used against active income? No, not unless I have losses while I'm a real estate professional. So when did this loss get created? Is this an ordinary loss or a passive loss? This is a passive loss. Mm-hmm. So even though I am now a real estate professional, it does not change the nature of this loss. So no, I cannot use it as a deduction against ordinary income. So there we go. Not fun.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention on this is when you become a real estate professional, if you have more than one property, you typically have to aggregate your properties together, combine them all into one activity.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is you have to, normally, if you're not a real estate professional, you sell a property, it releases all the losses on that property.
Mm-hmm.
So if this all came from one property and you sold it tomorrow, you'd release all of it.
Yes. You don't want to contaminate all your properties.
Correct. So if you aggregate a bunch of different properties together.
We have to be careful if you have losses that are being carried forward.
Yep. Because if you sell one of those properties, you're still not going to be able to release those losses until mm-hmm. you sell substantially all of your properties.
And somebody says, what about unearned income like SSDI? That's ordinary. No passive activity loss. Passive activity is businesses in which you do not materially participate in or real estate. That's it. Everybody always says, no, it's royalties and interest and dividends. No, it's not. That's portfolio income. And a lot of people pretend that doesn't exist. They call it all earned or unearned. And what it really is now we have ordinary income and we have passive income. And you do have portfolio income, which is some of it's ordinary, some of it's taxed as long-term right. capital gains. It all depends. So it's fun. Again, guys are all brainiacs now. Somebody says, what about the infinite banking system? Is it good for a business? Can be. We're big believers in the infinite banking concept where you, because we believe that you should be insuring for known issues. And I believe that you should make sure that you have a certain amount of life insurance and disability coverage so that if anything happens to you, you're not putting a burden on other folks. You're able to access that policy if you need to. We see that over and over and over and over and over again. So yeah, so we like the idea of growing the cash value, not being subject to the loss of the S&P. It all works out great. One of our partners here has left, and that's all he does, is Greg Boots. He wrote a book called The Private Vault, which we, you know, we have one that we could always send out to folks. Great information. And once you get sophisticated with the business, there are ways to create certain types of deductions. Yeah, usually using a nonprofit and a lending and a payroll deferral program where we can get write-offs now, but you will be paying that back out of the cash value in the future. So there's lots of cool things. There's also financing a policy. There's a group down in Texas that's all they do is they do financing. It's like there's some great things. So somebody asking about infinite banking, I think it's good. We call it the private vault. We use it a little bit differently, but it's pretty. Let's see. Somebody says, I know you don't sell products, but you know any affordable disability insurance? I found that is expensive. We have fiduciaries that we could send you to that are really good at finding the cheapest stuff. That's because they can't. I don't think it's that they can't. They have to put your interest before their own, and they don't rip you off because they're trying to get the highest commission. Anyway, Anderson Advisors podcast. You go in there, you get some of the replays in the Platinum portal. Some of you guys have been in there before. You guys know where we're sitting. Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time. If you want to blow, I'll finish this thing up.
All righty. We'll see you all next time. I'll see you all next time.
Jeff is a rock star and has been working his katush off with our folks. But if you like this stuff, we just love educating. And Jeff and I have been doing this for quite a bit of time. We have thousands of people that register for these events, and we have thousands of people that watch them every week. We like that. It's not millions, because we know it's tax stuff, and not everybody, you know, this doesn't float everybody's boat. But boy, the people that take this stuff to heart, they end up saving a lot, and they end up keeping a lot more. And I personally believe that if you keep it, you're going to do better than our government with it. So I'd rather you guys keep the money and do stuff with your own. If more information, if you, again, go to our social medias and register, it's all the same thing, aba.link/ whatever the service is, you can figure that out. And then if you have questions, by all means, send them in. Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors. We're not going to charge you to answer your question. If it gets too specific, we may hop in and say, hey, you need to be a client for us to get into this type of stuff. Like if it's tax prep or if it's very fact centric, for those of you guys who are platinum, you know, you can already ask unlimited tax questions in there. So platinum, if you want to learn about that, just reach out to Patty and she'll have somebody contact you. Platinum's $35 a month. There is a sign up fee. We waive it on certain types of packages that we offer, but it's $35 a month. You can talk to the accountants You can talk to all the attorneys, including tax attorneys, all you want, have unlimited consults, ask questions, have documents reviewed. And if you want to ask tax questions, you ask them through the portal. We do them in writing just because we want to make sure that we're giving you the right site and the exact right information so you can refer back to it and share it with your accountant if somebody else is doing your tax prep. But all of that, yeah, for $35 a month, I know. But we've been doing it for years. We have thousands and thousands of people in there, so we don't have to raise the price, and it works really, really well. And we're not pigs around here. We live just fine. We don't need to have six ranches, you know. Anyway, that's it for today. Thank you guys for showing up. Just reach on out to us. If you want to, hop onto our website and you can request a consult, or Patty, I think she's out there. She's going to reach out to for you guys. There we go. And we'll make sure that she gets you how to get your questions answered. Thanks guys again. And good luck to you guys all. Stay safe. And yeah, some of you guys are figuring out, maybe I need to have my taxes review. That's part of Platinum too. Yeah. So we do that as a courtesy. It's called the Keep More Solution. So reach out. We love to be able to save you some money and put it in your pocket. Thanks guys.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.